Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Monday, September 21st, 2015. And with me today from the MacCast, I have Adam Christensen. How's it going, Adam?
Good. Good. Now that we got Skype slapped around and running.
Man, Skype has just not been cooperating today. Man. So, yeah, we're recording a little late today, but that's only because we could not get Skype to work, nor could we get any of the other fallback options we had to work either.
Quite an interesting morning. Boy, technology.
Yeah, it's great when it works.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyhow, what I thought we could do is first take a look at this I don't want to call it a freak out moment, but this whole thing with Apple having to pull a bunch of apps from the App Store.
Yeah. I mean, it's a pretty serious thing, actually.
Yeah, actually it is, because there's, at least 50 apps that all ended up getting onto Apple's App Store, and all of them were infected with malware.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the short backstory on this is that these are all apps, pretty much. I think they're all apps that were developed in China.
Yes.
And the developers that release these apps did not intend to release malware-laden software.
No.
But what they did was downloaded Xcode from servers that weren't Apple's.
Yeah, for some of Baidu servers, which is a big service in China.
Right. And so then these copies of Xcode that they were downloading actually had the malware baked into them. So when someone would compile an app to deliver to the App Store, it would then inject this code, which, what was it called? Xcode Ghost?
Yeah, Xcode Ghost.
And then, unbeknownst to the developer, and apparently to Apple for a little while as well, these apps went out to the App Store, they got approved, and people were installing them.
Yeah, I think really the biggest one is WeChat is the biggest, probably the biggest problem. A lot of it, I think, was regionalized to apps in China, but not all of them. I mean, that's the problem, is some of these apps were in other app stores and distributed out.
Right. Yeah, one that stood out to me was Angry Birds 2.
That one's not clear, right? It's kind of confusing because that's one of the translated ones, maybe.
Well, yeah, Angry Birds, not Angry Birds, the company that makes Angry Birds.
Rovio. Did they respond?
They responded, and they said that this is the version of the app available in China.
Okay.
So if you have Angry Birds 2 installed and you didn't get it from the App Store in China, you're okay.
Right. Right. Now, I don't think the same was true for WeChat, but I'm not positive on that.
I believe you are correct.
Yeah, I got the word early, I mean like late last night, and then it's been sort of developing more this morning. I think they found some more apps and things like that. It's sort of been growing, so.
Right. Yeah. So we have an article that you can take a look at, and I listed a bunch of apps there. Just keep in mind it's not an inclusive list.
Yeah, there's also a popular like business card scanning app that went out in the U.S. as well with the malware, and I should have the name of it up in front of me right now, but I don't.
I should, too. I was just so excited to get Skype working that I didn't even think about pulling up apps to look at. Yeah. So now Apple has said that in addition to pulling the apps, they are now working with developers to make sure that they have legit copies of Xcode.
Yeah.
And now I found it interesting why legit developers would be downloading non-legit copies of Xcode.
Right.
And it comes down to the Great Firewall of China.
Yeah, exactly. Getting stuff from Apple's servers is incredibly slow, so it sounds like this is something that's gone on for a while, is someone gets a copy of Xcode and then puts it on this regional server on Baidu, and then other developers just pull down the copy from there, which is much quicker.
Sure. And
seems reasonable. I mean, it'd be like someone here, you know, throwing it up on their Dropbox account and sharing it out with other developers or something like that. Just basically redistributing the software. And that's what these developers thought. They were just pulling a legit copy. It would just happen to not be from Apple's servers.
Right.
And surprise.
Yeah, surprise. So, yeah, so all these apps get through the App Store vetting process. And Apple figures out later on that they're there. So they started pulling these apps late last week. And some of the apps have since been updated, so they are not malware-laden.
Including WeChat.
Yep, including WeChat, which is great. And I'm curious if Apple's going to be able to do anything to help mitigate this kind of problem in the future. But I'm not sure what they could easily do, because Apple working around China's internet restrictions.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of a big deal.
Well, you know, Apple has some sort of relationship in China, so you would hope that maybe they could develop a relationship and use regionalized servers somehow. Maybe they can't because they're not a Chinese company. I don't know how the regulations work.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I'm betting that there's people in Apple that are trying to sort this out right now.
Yeah. I mean, the answer seems to be there should be a propagation so that the installers get installed regionally in, you know, or on a server regionally in China, an Apple server, an Apple-run server, or some sort of official thing. I mean, that would be the answer. So yes, that developers don't feel the need to have to kind of, you know, do this workaround that they've been working on.
Right. And then I'm betting Apple is already working on measures to make sure that if Xcode gets hacked,
right,
like this, that they don't have a similar incident in the future.
Yeah, that's interesting. It'd be interesting to see how they could do that. Because I was thinking, you know, some sort of checksum or some sort of thing on the actual compiled file, you would think there'd be some indicator, but I mean, maybe not.
Yeah, and I was trying to figure out if there would be a way that Gatekeeper should have been able to detect that there was a problem with Xcode. And clearly not, because...
Well, oh, I see what you're saying. So, like, yeah, you would think that they could do sort of some sort of checksum on the actual installer file that the developer was running, you know, prior to it actually installing the software. So just even looking at the size of the package, because with the injected code, I would imagine that the package was slightly larger.
That would make sense.
There'd be more bytes within that file, right? So right, there should have been a basic checksum to say, okay, I know that Apple's latest version of Xcode is this size. You know, this has this checksum. This installer does not. So something fishy is going on here.
Yeah. And
that may be the answer right there.
But if that is the answer, that would be a really cool way to fix the problem. And it would probably be relatively easy in the grand scheme of things for right, Apple to implement.
Yeah. Apple would just have some sort of database that would have the checksums of all the installers, and there would just be right at launch, you know, before install time, some sort of check, call back and check with Apple servers. Hey, you know, is this checksum matching up?
I like this idea.
Yeah. Surprised it's not there already, honestly.
Yeah, I'm surprised as well. And if it is there, then that's another concern, because that means that the hackers that started distributing a malware-laden version of Xcode figured out how to work around that.
Yeah. You know, that's even interesting, too, because you're right. With Gatekeeper, you would think it would come up and say, you know, this is unsigned. Or, like, I would imagine to get that injected in there, they had to sort of reverse engineer, recompile an unsigned copy, which would mean you'd have to either turn off Gatekeeper or do the Gatekeeper bypass thing to run the installer, which should have indicated to the developers, hey, there's something fishy about this installer. But, you know, maybe that didn't stop them. Maybe that was normal. I don't know how the whole process worked in the past. But, again, this is, like, nothing new for the people in China, you know, running these installers. It sounds like it's been going on for a while. It's just this time they got bit.
Right.
And Camcard is the name of the
Camcard
scanner app, according to, yeah, that... was available in the U.S. Sorry.
Oh, that's all right. So if you have installed an app that you think may have come from these bad Xcode installs.
Right.
Uninstall the app, and then I think it'd be a good idea to start changing passwords.
Yeah, change your iCloud password. Because one of the problems with this, the things that could have happened is, one, it was definitely intercepting and grabbing some data and sending it back to some control servers. So it looked like mostly benign things other than your device's UUID, but it was like the language and country, you know, what kind of device you had, the name of your device, those sorts of things. But they also had the ability to sort of send a fake dialogue or prompt to kind of ask for credentials. And it's not clear. I mean, they could have skimmed credentials from things that you were, you know, running. So you absolutely if you did get one of these on there, you want to change your passwords.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And we should have mentioned the WeChat version was 6.2.5, and that was the only version that was infected. So 6.2.6 has the fix, and if you never installed 6.2.5, you should be fine.
That's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Well, as long as we're talking about App Store stuff, it just kind of seems appropriate that maybe we should talk a little bit about Peace. And for our listeners that don't know what I'm talking about, Peace was a content blocker app released for iOS 9, and it was written by Marco Arment. And his app, what it did was it let you take advantage of the content blocking features that are built into iOS 9. So that would keep a lot of extraneous code on websites from running. One of the side effects is a lot of ads don't appear. And
I think that's one of the intended effects.
I believe that is one of the intended effects, yes.
But yeah. People know, yeah, ads don't appear on your favorite websites. So revenue becomes a problem, right?
Yeah, revenue can become a problem. It depends on, well, there's a lot of factors that come into play. And I'm thinking if revenue was going to kill every site that, if ad blocking was going to kill every site that it took place on, we wouldn't have any websites right now.
But, well, I think it's kind of early, though, too. I mean, this is a new feature in iOS. Yeah, you've had it on the desktop, and I don't think that many people have used it, but there seems to be a general larger awareness now, which may have...
That's a good point.
...may have led into, you know, Marco's ultimate decision, too.
Right. So Marco decided to pull his app from the App Store. It was available for 48 hours, give or take, and during those 48 hours, it very quickly became the top-selling app on the App Store. And it was $2.99, and people were clearly very happy to shell out $3 a pop to block ads from appearing in mobile Safari.
Well, yeah, it's not just ads too. That's the other thing about this whole thing that people need to kind of understand. I mean, there is a big focus on ads because many of the websites that we enjoy and like are ad supported. So if you run a content blocker that's blocking ads, you're in essence, you know, taking away some of that revenue stream.
Right.
Right. And I mean, that's just the way these things work. Now, the counter argument to that, which is very valid, is a lot of this stuff also has tracking behind it. It also has, page load issues because of the size. A lot of it's JavaScript. So it adds a lot of extraneous code to the pages that you're downloading, and especially on mobile, that can really degrade the experience. Long load times. And there's been a lot of people, you know, demonstrating how when you run a content blocker, pages will load much more quickly, especially on mobile. So, you know, there's kind of a dichotomy between the two things. Yes, people want, you know, faster loading websites. They don't want to be tracked. They may be okay with ads, but we've gotten to a point where those things, in a lot of cases, aren't mutually exclusive.
Right.
And you can't separate them.
Right. And that's part of the problem that Marco was having, because he realized that his app had become so popular so quickly that he had become the way he described it was he had become the arbiter of what we saw online.
Right.
And he was not comfortable with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he thought he was just creating utility, and then when the popularity took off, I mean, it makes sense. Suddenly you realize, oh my gosh, you know, I'm sort of controlling content online for a bunch of sites that, you know, I'm not in charge of. And this is a little weird position to kind of be in.
Right.
You know, I'm suddenly the face of that because everybody knew he wrote the app and the app was very popular. And, you know, and then all the debate started up. And actually the debate had kind of started up before content blockers were released. It really started when Apple announced the feature back at, what was it, WWDC.
Right. And yeah, I know part of the purpose of the content blockers is to block ads. I think from Apple's perspective, that's actually a really big thing. Because right. I think content blockers in iOS 9, in addition to being something that can improve the overall performance of our mobile web browsing experience, it is that this is a direct assault on Google.
Yeah. Yeah. It does. You know, Apple's not going to admit it, but when you think about it, you turn these content blockers on, they only block web view stuff. So they will block in apps if the app is using web view, but if the app has embedded ads in it, say like iAds, those sorts of things are not blocked. Same thing with Apple's news application. You can have ads inside the new news app, and those aren't going to be blocked by the content blockers. So really, it's just the web, and that's really Google's domain. And Apple sort of controls apps and, you know, other sorts of methods that, you know, once these content blockers are enabled, aren't going to impact Apple.
Right. So from Apple's perspective, content blockers are a win all the way around, because the places where they do control ads are not places that content blockers touch.
Yeah. And I do think another benefit for Apple, again, is performance of Safari and web surfing, right? If people enable these things, they're having a better web experience.
Yeah, and I've been experimenting with several of mm-hmm. the content blockers, and my experience right now is that I get a marked improvement in page load times,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't surprise me. Yeah, that's exactly what I expected. So now I have to figure out, how am I going to implement this for me? Because the idea of me blocking web ads is on some level distasteful, because I know that's how a lot of my paycheck is created.
Right. Yes.
So that would make me something of a hypocrite if I am getting my money through that avenue, but then blocking ads so that other people can't do the same.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, there's some arguments being put out there. Some people are saying out there, well, if you're going to use one, you know, make sure that you unblock or you whitelist your favorite websites, which is great from a, you know, make me feel good kind of perspective, but it's really not the reality. If people start using these things, they're not going to bother, I don't think, in most cases, to whitelist sites. They're just going to turn it on, set it, and forget it.
So, yep.
So the flip side of it, though, is I think we as content providers and people who, you know, work on sites that serve up ads and things like that, and I think Dave wrote a kind of pretty good piece about this, or a couple of them on Mac Observer.
Yes, he did.
You know, the point is we're going to have to start to think about what this means. And what this means is that the public is saying, look, we're tired of the tracking. We're tired of the popovers and the in-your-face, the aggressive advertising techniques. We're tired of this impacting our experience. We want something better. And until you do it, this is our solution. And so I think, you know, it's good because it's going to start up a conversation. And I think we're going to see some of the bad behavior that's sort of creeped into online marketing and web advertising get rolled back a little bit, or at least rethought, and maybe come up with some more creative uses or ways to, you know, implement ads that aren't as egregious and that we can all agree are okay and don't slow things down and don't detract from the content experience.
Yes, I'm all for a better overall web surfing experience, better page load times. And at the same time, I'm all for finding a good compromise
right.
where content creators can still make a living.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be a tricky thing, but you know, I think we've been kind of lazy for a while because it's just been easy to grab the code, you know, to sign up for a Google account, you know, AdWords account or whatever it might be, and throw the code on your page. You know, and it's not just that code too. We've got, you know, all the social media services, so all the share buttons and all of the like buttons and all of those things add code. And so it's been this sort of pile on for a long time, and it's, you know, I think people have just finally gotten tired, and this is the response to it. This is like, hey, enough is enough.
Right. And, yep, I think we have a conversation that's clearly getting started. Hopefully we'll end up with a good solution for everyone, because people want to see stuff online, and content creators need a little money to make it happen.
Yeah, there's going to be a little pain in between, but we'll all get through it, and we'll get it all figured out.
Yeah, and we're out of time. So thank you so much for joining me, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me, as always.
Yeah, it's great to have you here on the show today, and I just love the insight you bring when you're here. Listeners, thank you for being here today. It's always great to have you joining us at our little virtual table, and I'll make sure there's a link in the show notes to the article Dave wrote where he's soliciting feedback from you on exactly what it is that you want to see in online advertising and online revenue generation systems for sites like TMO. Everyone, thank you for being here. We'll see you again tomorrow.